Welcome to the Success IQ podcast, the show for entrepreneurs wanting to create and live an exceptional life. I'm your host, Jeff Nicholson, and this is episode 162. For those of you who are new to the show, welcome. I'm a specialist in performance and mindset, working with business owners all over the world, supporting them to be the best and perform at the highest levels in life and business. And I achieve this through my coaching and online programs. I started this podcast simply to discover how other thought and business leaders create and enjoy success, and to identify those common strategies and techniques, as well as the mindset that they have adopted in their to live their version of exceptional. My aim is for you to learn and implement the valuable lessons shared in these episodes. You deserve to live and enjoy an exceptional life, but in order to achieve this, you will need to adopt new strategies and ways of thinking to accomplish your goals. Now, on with the show. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are in the world. I truly hope you are having an amazing week. So we have got a great guest on the show. Our guest today is Mia Hewitt. Now, Mia is the founder and CEO of Aligned Intelligence, the best-selling author of Meant for More, and an expert on the topic of human potential. Mia helps the entrepreneurs and aspiring entrepreneurs who know they are meant for more stop secretly struggling and make 6 to 7 figure leaps in their business using their Alignment Intelligence method. This methodology works consistently and predictably to allow her clients the ability to coach themselves through any obstacle, build their dream businesses, and feel fulfilled in their purposes. Mia is passionate about empowering purpose-driven entrepreneurs to live the lives they've always known they are meant to be living. Welcome to the show, Mia.
Hey, thanks so much for having me, Jeff.
I am so looking forward to you. And you're coming from a lovely part of the world, Boston, as well. So I bet it's cold there at the minute, is it?
It is. It absolutely is. And I'm actually originally from born in Florida and grew up in South America. So this is not my favorite place to be right now. Yeah.
No, I can imagine. Whereabouts in Florida were you originally from?
Fort Lauderdale area. Yeah.
Oh, lovely. Lovely. I've been to Boca Raton. Is that near Fort Lauderdale?
Yes. It's just north of us. I know Boca really, really well.
Yeah. You see, we're English. I don't even pronounce the places properly. So.
No, that's right. It's Boca Raton. Is that's it. You got it. It's called the mouth. And the funny thing is, that's Spanish, right? So that's actually the mouth of the rat.
Is that what it means?
Yes. It is the funniest thing. I just have to laugh about that because it is a wealthier area in Florida.
I was going to say, it's quite a posh place as well. Wow.
Yes, but that's actually what that translates to. But nobody really knows that if you're not Spanish. Anyway, I have to laugh about that.
There you go. So before we dive into this, the topic that we're going to talk about today, can you give us a little bit of a backstory that's brought you to this point?
Absolutely. I think the biggest thing that anybody would really want to know about me, like, why should they even listen to me? I really feel is what will do it best if I share is when I was about 5 years old, I remember playing in my room and I heard my father calling me, and I could tell by the sound of his voice that he meant business. He was pissed at something. And of all the people, Jeff, in my household, my dad was the one who really scared me the most, because I could never figure out as a kid what was going to set him off. Like, one minute he'd be this like funny, gregarious guy, and the next minute it's like boom, a bomb would go off and somebody got hurt. Like, somebody got punished or hurt. So I always felt like I had to walk around on eggshells. And I remember this time because, you know, inside of being around four to five, somewhere in there, I remember, you know, asking him, why do you want to go outside? And he said, I just want to spend time with you. And I remember thinking, oh my gosh, dad wants to spend time with me? Like, this just doesn't happen. Like, I wasn't his favorite. favorite. There was, my older sister was kind of the boy that he never had. And so I was the real girly girl, like very non-adventurous kind. Anyway, we go outside and he says to me, "Which one is your favorite chicken?" And I remember thinking, oh, that's easy. That one, right? Because she was amazing. Every time I'd go outside, she always wanted to know what I was doing. I'd always give her these little worms. Anyway, with complete neutrality in his voice, he said, "Great. Well, that's the one we're going to kill today." And my mind, Jeff, went blank. It went crazy. Like I went completely in confusion. My mind starts spinning. I hear someone scream. I realize, oh my gosh, it's me. And I feel I have done something horrible. Like this is all my fault. I froze. My mind went blank. And that day, Jeff, the life that I knew changed forever. Because you see, that day I decided people don't really mean what they say. You can't really rely or trust anyone, not even your own father. And the world, well, it's not really a safe place. So that day I vowed at 5 years old that I would never let this happen to me again. And so I built these walls around myself and I didn't let anyone in for years, even decades. I just never knew back then, Jeff, that the walls that I built to protect myself would become my greatest limitations for myself and my business.
So for you, because that happened. I mean, obviously not the story about the chicken and stuff. That's wow. Okay. And there's not much you can say about that. How for you, what sort of limitations did those walls put on? Cause loads of people do that. And for you, how do you see the limitations, not only from, you know, business owners in themselves trying to grow or smash through the glass ceiling or whatever it is, what sort of limitations do you see that causing?
Oh my gosh. Because I've been an entrepreneur now for over 32 years, like it caused, before I really understood all this, it caused me to consistently self-sabotage. I would trade time for money. I would literally like cattle prod myself, cause myself to burn out, like never asking for help. I wouldn't ask for things that I needed. I constantly thought I had to do everything myself. I would go into complete confusion states. I would go into analysis by paralysis. I would overthink everything. I couldn't make a decision to save my life. Like it was just horrible. And then I would constantly feel this incredible remorse, like feeling stuck and then spinning my wheels, trying to grab all of these partial solutions from all these different experts, trying to piece them together, not really ever achieving my goals, right? And then just completely like living in burnout 24/7. And it wasn't until it really took, you know, I was at my wit's end and I had, I'd gone to years of therapy trying to figure out like, why is it that everybody can see, they look at me like I have this kind of success, but on the inside, I felt like a complete failure, like just completely insecure, completely fear of rejection, fear of being like at any moment, it could all be taken away because I grew up poor. And so I just went to my gosh, anybody and everybody that was any kind of expert. And I tried years of therapy. I've worked with the best and the best in the industry and nobody could tell me what was really going on. Like they, you know, it was just kind of like, well, you know, like there's that inner critic, just get over it. Kind of like, just don't do that. And I was like, if I could just not do that, I would have just not done that a long time ago. So yeah. So what I found, it took, you know, I'm not an overnight success. It took me 6 years to uncover what I can help somebody free themselves in 8 weeks. And it really comes down to this. This is what I wish somebody would have told me like, I'm 53, so a long time ago. I would have loved to know this in my 20s. And that's why I wrote my book, is because I really tell everybody exactly the truth that I wish somebody would have told me in my 20s in that book. But this is basically what happens, is that when we're born, Jeff, we're born whole, perfect, and complete. Like, there's, you know, inside of the, yeah, you know, right? That there's a harmony. There's a harmony to us. We totally trust ourselves, others, and the world. And then something happens. I see the most amount of traumas around 2 years old. That's usually the most amount. Between 2 to 3 is very, very normal. And so what happens is we go into an experience where we would normally go through it and feel whole, perfect, and complete. And we go into it, and this time something happens and it blindsides us. It literally catches us off guard. Like, we didn't see it coming. One moment we were happy, the next minute this traumatic things happen, and we're like, how did this happen to me? And as children, we don't go, oh, mom or dad is just having a bad day. Or we don't go, oh, teacher is just, you know, having a bad day. No, we internalize it to mean there must be something really wrong with me for this to have happened. So then what we do as a way to protect ourselves from the emotions we're feeling for the first time, we had never felt those emotions before. What we do to protect ourselves is we actually, and this is going to feel too strong of a word, but you have to feel it more than think it. We pull back, we separate from the larger part of who we really are, and we become a way of being, an identity to survive our life, which is called the ego, right? So in my family, like, in the way that that happens, there's two sides to ego. Everybody has both sides, but one will be more predominant. Like, there's the superiority ego, and those are the rebels of the world. And, you know, they're like, I'm going to prove it to you. And then there are the inferiority ego, which is, you know, where we hide and not want to, you know, pull back and not want to be seen and not challenge anything, not speak up, be quiet. And so, of course, my older sister had superiority ego. So I went to inferiority ego because she'd have killed me. Right? Like, you can't have two like that next to each other. That's why two parents that are like that don't last. Right? You need one of each one in order to be able to survive in that household. So that's what happens to us, because as the child grows, we grow with an emotional bond of trust. And when that trust is broken, which is what happened that day, we then become a way of being to survive. And so what happens to us is then, in order to try to never have that happen to us again, we take on that new persona in a way to try to protect ourselves. We build the walls, but we don't know. Nobody told us that based on the universal law of cause and effect, it will keep playing out, because it keeps playing in our programming, in our subconscious mind, over and over and over again. So every time we focus on those things, then obviously more of that comes and more of that comes. Like, we have all kinds of experiences. So we continue to prove ourselves right, even when we're wrong.
And by doing that, then you're also creating neurology that just builds up those pathways to go, this is the way it should be.
Exactly. Exactly. And then we settle, or at least some of us settle inside of like, okay, this is just as good as it gets, right? And inside of that, but it's until we are willing to go deeper, or really what happens, and I'm sure you see this, Jeff, in your business as well, but, you know, the people who come to me are the people who, when the pain of what they're living is greater than the fear of the change, right?
It's that moment that... Too many, and I was no different. Too many people don't change. They live reactively rather than proactively. So they only make the decision to come and see people like us when they sometimes physically, sometimes really, and sometimes metaphysically smack through the wall. That they don't make those decisions. And then it's once they realize there's work to do, it then filters the people who are serious about what they want to do and make the decision. And it's, yeah, absolutely. It's that, it's, yeah, it's mad. I mean, it's, I think cases when we, there's a great story called the carrot, the egg and the coffee bean. And they talk about how adversity, and this long story made short, this little girl is talking to her grandma, and the grandma says, well, when adversity hits you, how do you deal with it? You know, when the adversity, i.e. the hot water, hits a carrot, it takes something hard and turns it into something soft and can't really deal with things. If it hits an egg, it goes from something that's hard on the outside but nice and soft on the inside, and it turns it rock hard. Said, oh, are you going to live your life like a coffee bean? It changes the adversity into something that it can work with. And it's, but people, and I think the ego is an interesting thing, because I remember a book I read where Wayne Dyer describes ego as edging God out. And I often see people not taking these steps because ego gets in the way. Now, if I'm understanding the way that you describe ego, that's the second part, taking over.
Yeah, so what happens is how we get stuck in self-sabotage then is, so when these, let me back up just a tad. So when these, when this happens to us, so prior to the age of 7, we don't have a conscious mind. We only have a subconscious mind, the feeling mind. But then as we go beyond 7, we're creating our conscious mind, our logical, rational mind, right? Well, here's what happens then. The reason we start self-sabotaging is we loop between, we know what to do logically, but emotionally we can't seem to do it, right? So the two, we feel like we're like of two minds. I know I cannot be the only one. Like, this is exactly how I used to feel. That's why I would be like, I know what you're saying is true, but why can I not feel that way? Why do I struggle with that anxiety? Like, why does that, you know, those two parts of ourselves, right? So we're looping between the two. And then what happens is, the reason why inside of, so we've got these two parts, we feel this fragmented within. We've got the ego part of ourself that we created. So I don't think of ego as bad. Ryan Holiday wrote the book, The Ego is the Enemy, right? But I actually don't see the ego as bad, because we created the false self when we didn't know, we didn't have another way. We would have had to have parents who were able to model for us how to process our own emotions, and so that it wouldn't stay a trauma, right? So that we wouldn't have to build some type of protection. Well, they're in their own traumas, right? So so that's not the people I get. I'm sorry, but that's not my family. There was trauma galore there. So, right. So why I'm saying this is that what happened is we become of these like two minds in that sense. And it can feel like we're being controlled by that, the ego. But in reality, what's happening is we literally just felt and magnified that experience so deeply that it became our programming, and anything that we magnify the feeling of, re-evaluate how we perceive ourselves and expand upon in our concept of ourself will become true, whether that's good or bad, right? And because inside, and I don't mean right, wrong, but I mean like inside of the universal law of polarity, which says that everywhere, everything in this universe, this time space reality, has a whole and equal and opposite side. So meaning, for there to be an up, there's a down. For there's to be an in, there's an out. Well, that means for a problem to exist, the equal opposite solution must equally exist at the same moment in time, not a different moment, Jeff. So which is the same as our ego. So our ego can exist at the same moment that our aligned self or the bigger part of ourself or our God self, like to tie back into what you when Wayne Dyer said, ego, right? Ego is edging God out, meaning that bigger part of ourself loses the connection to all, everything, where that's where our infinite potential is. That's where all our great ideas come from and so forth. And it goes into the small self, which is the false self or the ego self, in order to try to protect ourselves from rejection or feeling we are not capable, like responsibility, or feeling like we're going to make mistakes, or feeling like we, you know, that somehow we don't matter in some way. So, right. So we've got these two sides, and the key is inside of, once we can understand this, pull back as an observer and see the patterns, see the programming. Well, now when we do the, when we pull back, right? So like the best, one of the best things somebody could ever do is to learn the habit of pulling back out of themselves and kind of taking a bird's eye view down on themselves. Because when we do that, we separate from the unconscious programming and go into consciousness. Another way of saying it is we stop being in a perception of reality, which is what ego creates. You know, there's a perception, and we come back out into reality, as in the whole reality, right? It's so good.
It's interesting because when I call it the second part of my life, when I went through my crucible moment and I came out the other side, I learned to be a therapist first before I became a coach, because I wanted to understand, I wanted to have that skill set. I have an issue about coaches trying to be therapists when they don't understand it. One of the processes we were taught was parts. And it was that bit where, like you've said, there is, you've got one part of you is wants this, and the other part of you wants this, but it's doing it and it's kind of like stopping you from doing it. And the one question that we always used to ask is, how old are you? And it always used to be, you know, like you said at the beginning, it was 2, 3, 4, 5. And it was amazing when you asked them to start talking to those parts and asking, you know, what is it you want from me? And they all wanted exactly the same. They just did it in a very, very, very different way. One was stopping you from doing it because it was either fear or, you know, fear of rejection or fear of people laughing at them or something more traumatic, depending on what we were dealing with. And I think people don't, you know, we know this from, I'm sure, the work you do, and I know the work I do, and people don't realize what potential they have until they start. And the way I look at it is they've got to have the courage. You know, sometimes they've just got to go, do you know what? I've got to do this, because what is the alternative? The alternative is, do I settle for mediocrity and be happy, be discontent, and think that grass is always greener on the other side, but not enjoy those experiences? Or do I just do some hard work and challenge myself? Because working on yourself, there's nothing harder, in my view anyway, to move through things.
Yeah, I really can acknowledge that, in the sense of what I fear, like in my direct experience, what I find is that the biggest thing that really stops people is actually the fear of shame. It really comes from morality. It's really the rights and wrongs, right? Like, so we've all been raised in a household where there was a right way to do something and a wrong way to do something. The problem is, though, based on the different personalities, to who's right. Like, you know, like my mom wanted some things different than my dad wanted, and my dad wanted things different than my mom wanted. And it was like, you know, you can spend your whole life trying to please everyone and never really, you know, getting anywhere, right? Because people are fickle. Like that might be that day, but the next day it might be something else. So the reason I say this with the most love and just really grace is because I see that the biggest thing that stops people is the fear of being wrong. And so, right? And so all judgment, right? All judgment is a projection of what I don't want to own within me. So then every single uncomfortable, disliked emotion is really the key to my biggest transformation, right? Like, because vulnerability, like when this trauma happened and we walled ourselves up, like, you know, I made it mean when I vowed never to allow anyone in again, I made it mean on some subconscious level that to be vulnerable was weakness. And I didn't want to have that because I felt like somehow I must have been weak for that to happen, right? Because obviously I couldn't imagine that could happen to someone who was strong. So I totally, you know, had it that I could never be seen as weak, which was another problem of mine, because then anytime I was around any personality that was dominant, like my dad, it doesn't matter how wealthy I was, like how much success I had, as soon as I would become around that personality, I would become that age again. Exactly what you said. I would literally go into like 4 to 5 frozen state, totally confused. My mind would shut down. I couldn't make sentences out. I become the dumbest person in the room. And so, yeah. And I always like to say to people, it's because we can't think greater than how we feel. So we have to learn to process the emotions we're feeling and learn the skills of how to pull back out of the ego and then come back into reality inside of the feeling place of really where that is and your aligned self. And once we do it, once we know how to do that, and we can do that, like I love to really help people get that skill down pat, because once you do that, and it can happen very quickly. You just interrupt a state. You know exactly how to come back out of it, really look down on it, be able to clear the, you know, see what you were making it mean, clear the misunderstanding from the misconception, come back into alignment in yourself. It happens very quickly. Well, now, as a result of that skill, my ego doesn't run. So I don't have a negative voice in my head anymore. That doesn't mean, and I always like to say this to people, that doesn't mean that I don't have an ego. It just doesn't, I don't operate from it. So it doesn't, right? Because some people think, I've gotten some very spiritual people in my business, like, you know, who are business owners, and they have a tendency to think that the work is to enlighten your ego. You will not enlighten it. I always say to them, you're not insecure. Your ego is, but you don't misunderstand your ego from who you really are, right? Like, I like to make fun of it in the most loving way, but it's like a gnat. It's like if it's the size of my pinky, and who I really am is the whole me, and I have a pinky, like, I'm not going to beat up on my pinky because, you know, it's just a pinky. I'm going to be like, hey, it's part of my hand. It's just part of being, you know, what it is to be a human being. I'm not going to make it wrong, you know, but I'm not going to make it so significant, which is where I feel that this is where it got all out of hand, because our parents, not understanding what's going on in their own trauma, everything became significant over that gnat.
Yeah, they're doing the best thing that they think they're doing because of the lessons and poor lessons that maybe, or trauma that they have received from their parents. And it's just this constant flow down the line. And I think is the way I always look at it when, and I certainly didn't get it right before my big trauma in my adulthood, is I realized that my choice was to break that when I had my kids. So, I probably got them a bit later on, but I can definitely see the difference between the boys because of the lessons that I learned in how to do it. And I think that it's just because it's, you know, it's like you don't have to, if you keep on doing what you've always done, you'll always get the same results. And it goes right the way through in our ways of thinking and how we treat people and everything else. And I think, you know, there's a lovely word is you just, I'm trying to think of the word now, but I'm not going to use it because I'm going to cock that one up. So it's just about being the true, authentic you.
Yes. Yes. Because that part is still like when we let go of the resistance or the identity of the ego, when we let go of it, meaning where we no longer operate from it, just building that muscle of interrupting it. Like I always say to people, just set an alarm 5 minutes in the morning before you ever start your day and really center, like really come out of ego. I don't like do the typical meditation. I just come into alignment with my vivid vision. I know exactly what I'm on task for this year to create in my business. I know exactly what we're doing to get there and live the life that we, you know, just absolutely want to live. And I really believe in quantum leaping. I don't believe in stair-stepping growth. I've done that in my own business, in my life. When you understand the laws, when you understand, because here's what I feel is just so huge. And again, this is why I wrote that in the book, is because when I feel these pieces, when you know how, like, how do you really win the game of life? When you know the rules, meaning like most people don't understand the game. Like I didn't know about the universal law of cause and effect growing up. I didn't know about the universal law of polarity. I didn't know definitely about an ego or a different identity of than who I was. But when you can understand these components of what is it really to win the game of life? And then like, what are those rules that, you know, they're just like gravity. They just are. They don't favor one side or another. Like they're equal opportunity offenders, right? If you focus on something you don't want, don't worry, you will get more of it, right? It doesn't go, oh, well, for you, we'll skip that for you because you really want something else. No, it gives you anything you focus on. It goes, here you go, right? So we always prove ourselves right, right? So like if you knew that and you understood how to win the game of life, and then you understood how to really operate at your highest potential, meaning how to understand, you know, we don't know that we like chocolate until we know we don't like vanilla, right? So that contrast of we don't know who we really are until we know who we're really not. And so when we can see the two parts of ourselves, which is like what this is what I love helping people see, because once I could see what that identity was and give it a form, because, you know, it's formless, but when you can see it in a form, because you can really get your hands and your mind around it, because you can see the behaviors and you can see the exactly the decisions and your attitude and your habits and your behaviors from that identity. And then you can see who you really are from your aligned self or your authentic self, either way, it's the same for me. But then when you can see it from there and you can see, well, what would those decisions be? And what would that attitude be? And what would my habits and my behaviors be from that point of view? When you can see the contrast between who you are really and who you became to survive, now you have the, in my opinion, the greatest power, which is the power of choice.
Okay, so what we're going to do is we're going to go to the second part of the show. This is where I ask you a set of questions that I ask every guest who comes on the show. So the first question is, on average, how much time roughly do you dedicate to self-development a week?
Oh my gosh, I feel like I live in it 24/7. So I don't have this like compartmentalized answer. I'm sorry. Like I don't have like a, but I live in it 24/7. I swim in it.
Okay. No, that's a good answer and a good place to swim, really. Yeah. Okay, number two, what book has made the biggest impact to your self-development and personal growth, and why? And it doesn't have to be a traditional personal development book.
Yeah, no, I love that question because two pop into my mind right away, and I'll give you one, but two are the ones that pop in my mind. So Psycho-Cybernetics by Dr. Maxwell Montz definitely made a huge impact. I feel that the way that he explained how that if you could tie your shoe, right, and be able to consistently do something as simple as tying your shoe and worrying, that you could achieve success, because it literally just takes the habit of doing something over and over again and focusing on something like worry, but rather than worry, focusing on something going well over and over again, that you could be successful. But he goes deeper than what I'm telling you, but I think that was brilliant. Yeah.
No, it's great. But what is the other book, just out of curiosity?
Yeah. I mean, you know, the one thing comes to my mind, but also The Slight Edge. You know, turning simple disciplines into massive success. The Slight Edge was a huge one for me in that how simple habits and, you know, like it's another one like James Clear, you know, the Atomic Habits. But when we can keep it so simple and really the compounding, you know, what successful people do really, really well is it's not the one thing, it's the compounding small thing, right? To win big, we've got to win small.
I love that. And number three, what app makes the biggest impact to your business or personal life?
You know, I'm a big user of Basecamp. So I'm a project manager person. Like I'm really, as much as people are always like, wow, you're like this, you know, spiritual person, but I'm grounded in practical. So I take the spiritual stuff and put it right into practical. And to me, it's about closing that alignment gap, and using Basecamp is one of my favorite project manager tools to get shit done. Yeah.
Lovely, lovely. Number four, what's your biggest business mistake that turned into a valuable lesson, and what did it teach you?
Oh, I love that. I spent $26,000 on a person who's pretty famous, who said that they would help me find my ideal client years ago. And I learned I didn't get one client from it. And I learned a very valuable lesson. Even when you go to hire that part out in your business, right, inside of like branding or marketing, you still have to know it before you can let it go. And it was the best lesson I learned, because there are things you don't need to know, right? Like there's things that you can really let go of and allow other people, but your branding and who your ideal client is and your marketing, you can't let go of in this game of business.
No, very wise words, very wise words. Number five, what are your challenges in harmonizing work and life, and how do you manage them?
Oh, that's a great question. I actually don't compartmentalize them into two different parts. So I find that the struggle comes when we try to compartmentalize those. Like, you know, like just the feeling of, because it's kind of like that feels like to me the same as I don't do to-do list. And people always are like, you don't do a to-do list. I said, no, because think about it. It's like as soon as you start a to-do list, there is no way that you are ever going to get done everything you need to do on a to-do list. But you don't need to be successful. Isn't that fun? The cool thing is it's not how much you do, but actually how much you actually simplify and do less. The reason I can make so much money is because I actually don't try to do a large amount of things per quarter. I'm only ever working on the top three things, and I'm only ever focused on with my team the number one thing that must be accomplished before we move to number two and number three. So I'm never really working on so many things. So back to the point of like that work-life balance, I really feel that when we can not compartmentalize it, and we can actually look at it as a whole. And then I have to say, but I'm also a big believer of choosing your lifestyle first and then applying the business model that will allow you to have that lifestyle, because then you win all the way around. Because to me, last thing on that for me is, to me, as somebody who's made, you know, millions of dollars on two different companies, success without fulfillment is the ultimate failure.
Yeah, because I've worked with, you know, successful CEOs who have made a lot of money, but they're absolutely miserable. And you just think, what was the point?
That's right.
You know,
what was the point on that?
Nice having money, but not if you're not enjoying why you've made it.
Exactly. And I feel you, because I've worked with many who, you know, they're on their fourth wife, right? Or so. And so, you know, and again, I'm not criticizing, because it's all coming from the trauma, but I also do want to say that, you know, it really is starting in the right order. It's like a recipe. You have to first choose the lifestyle, and then the business model is, because here's another big misunderstanding that I wish somebody would have told me a long time ago. Many people have compartmentalized, oh, you don't understand because I'm in this business. I'm in the business of law. I'm an attorney. Oh, you don't understand because I'm in insurance. Oh, you don't understand because I'm in this, because we've compartmentalized it into these different compartments. And I say to every single one of them, you're incorrect. With love, you're incorrect. The truth is, there's everybody's in the business of relationships. All a business only exists to solve a problem. And the way that you must solve it is through relationships and that experience with that ideal client. So everybody's in the relationship game. You just are using the vehicle of insurance or the vehicle of law. So I like to say that, because when we start with the lifestyle we want to live and then we choose the right vehicle to apply to that lifestyle, well, we win all the way around.
Brilliant. Very good. Number six, what advice would you give an entrepreneur that you wish you had known starting out?
You don't need any money.
Ooh. I like that one.
I know that this is opposite of what people teach, but I will tell you, the number one mistake I see, the people that I get that are just starting out or have been like at it for maybe a year or two or something like that and struggling, the biggest misunderstanding they have is they think they need to create it first and then they're going to sell it. And that is the absolute worst advice anybody ever gives. And there are top people and that actually teach this, which it is terrible advice, because the best way to know whether you have a proof of concept that it will actually, that the market really wants that and values that to the degree, is for you to get paid. So you need to use that. I always tell people when they say, but I don't have any money. Good. You don't want any money, because that's going to make you really good at seeing, is there a market for this? Because what I see most often with startups is they get a lot of people on board to an idea. They're great at selling the idea, but the market didn't want it.
Absolutely. I think also as well is they often don't make decisions because they think they need a huge marketing budget, or they think they need a huge whatever. And actually, the hunger of the fact that you have no money.
Right.
Is you're going to be far more hungry doing the work.
Yes.
And understanding your market better.
Yes.
Because you've got to be a lot more.
That's right.
You can't be frugal with your cash.
That's exactly right. Like I say often, you know, because I did it twice, right? I built it from scratch. And I say that twice is because in between the two, I went through a divorce, and all of my money in retirement, I set it up in an account where I couldn't touch it until over the age of 65. So I literally screwed myself in the sense of, like, once I signed the papers, because we had an agreement, he literally changed the locks on all the doors, and I literally had to start from scratch and build the second one all up again. And here's why I'm saying this, is because inside of the fundamentals of business, in the game of business, you have to understand, once you have the, you know, once you know that the what your lifestyle, and then you understand and you clarify the business model that has an ascension model to it. So you want a scalable business model, because the way to win in business is to make sure that we don't have to work as hard. So we want to be able to, you know, colleges did this brilliantly. They didn't, you know, institutions, they didn't say, okay, like pay us for 1 year and that's it. They said, come to our school. We're going to solve the first problem, and then we're going to open up the second problem and solve that one. And then we're going to, so they extended the lifetime value of a client to a minimum of 4 years. Right now, I'm not saying screw people. I'm saying really deliver value. But when you understand that and you have a scalable business model, so you've clarified and you have the right business model and it's scalable, then you've identified your ideal client, and then you've quantified it, meaning you have found and spoken to enough of those ideal clients that they're willing to pay you money in exchange for that result. So you have proof of concept. Now you can take it and amplify it, because that's the money you will need to then run ads, to do a funnel, to do the live launching, right? And now it's just a matter of rinse, lather, and repeat.
Yeah, and I think the persistence to keep doing it, like if it fails the first time, that doesn't mean it's not working. It just means that iteration hasn't worked. And it's that tweaking, isn't it?
Well, we will know inside of like, this is the cool thing. Cause when we do it this way, instead of throwing a bunch of cash at it and then hoping it works, what we do instead is we get paid to get paid, meaning the proof of concept. So if you have an offer that people are not valuing, like your ideal client is not valuing, we need to see where is it that you think it's a great idea, but they don't really value it. Because what I find, Jeff, and I'm sure you see this, is the reason why most entrepreneurs struggle is because they actually confuse their value with worth, like what somebody values, as far as like meaning they collapse value onto worth. So value comes from another person, how they perceive your product, service, or program is worth to them. But worth comes from us deciding that we're deserving of what we're asking for. So they're not related, right? But most people collapse it. So then when they do an offer and somebody doesn't want to pay that, they think that they're not worth it. When really what it was saying was, no, they didn't perceive what that offer was, that product or a service or program was valued in return for them. So we have to see where are we off in that perception? Like, where is it? And then go again and kind of dial that in until we've got the exact proof of concept, which then gives us, you know, that we've quantified our offer, and then we can amplify it.
Absolutely. Okay. Question number 7 is, what is your personal definition of success?
Oh, that is awesome. So for me, and again, success is all about fulfillment, and it's living an epic life, like really going out and living this life to the absolute fullest is what I think is just the most important. So we're given this life to live, and why not optimize it and make it epic?
I love it. Okay. Question number 8, do you have any daily routines or rituals that make a huge positive impact to your day?
Well, I live in alignment. So what that means is I really operate from my aligned self. But the daily, what I would say that I do day in and day out along with that is I live inside my vivid vision. So once I make a decision of where that end result is, that, you know, like there's a saying that says, you know, the journey of 1,000 miles begins with the first step. And I hate that because I think it's missing a second piece to it, right? It should say, the journey of 1,000 miles begins with the first step, and the end must be present in the beginning.
You got to know where your destination is.
Yes. And I hate when it is like a half of a sentence. So, I feel like that is what I would say is the one habit in living in the end, which is what I call a vivid vision. I live there. I literally live there, as in it's done. I'm there. It's already a done deal. I'm literally already booking everything that it's happening. Like I make a decision and I go all in, and I never, ever, ever come question it or come out of that.
The other saying I like is, I love build your wings on the way down. Jump off a cliff and build your wings on the way down. My friend doesn't like it because he says, but you've got to have the right equipment.
There you go.
So yeah, I get that completely. Brilliant. So we've come to the end. The floor is now yours. How can people find out more about you? Where can we get hold of the book? Please take the floor.
Sure, absolutely. Well, they can get it for free just on your site inside of. All they have to do is go to, I'll give you the link, and I know you'll post it in show notes, but I'll tell them here. It's Mia, meantformorebook.com. And then they just need to put in a password, because it is free on that page only. So the password is, it's all one word, and it's free book. So capital F, R-E-E-B-O-O-K, free book, all one word, but it's Mia, meantformorebook.com. And the password is free book, and they can just download it for free. It's really what I wish people would have told me a long, long time ago. I'm so excited. They can always reach out to me. I'm the one answering my own emails. My team doesn't. So if they have any questions about the book, I'm happy to clear anything up for them, for themselves, because it was written for them. It's written in story format so they can ask these questions to themselves and unravel their entire trauma so they can see it all for themselves, so it no longer becomes the biggest blind spot that is keeping them struggling.
Brilliant. Mia, thank you so much for taking the time and joining me. I've thoroughly enjoyed our conversation, and I just want to wish you the greatest success.
Thank you so much, Devin. Thanks so much for the work you're doing in the world and having me on. I just so appreciate you and your time.
So first of all, just let me say a massive thank you for joining me today. It's lovely to know that you're out there listening. And it's great to have the emails that I get from you with suggestions about the show and what you think about the show. That's really nice. Really does help me make the show even better. If you'd like to find out more about me and the types of services I offer or my social media links, then please visit www.jeffnicholson.uk. You can also join us on the Facebook page. Just search for Success IQ Podcast. And that's a new page that we've put up that I'm trying to grow and develop. So you can tune in and find us on other stations such as Stitcher, SoundCloud, TuneIn Radio, and of course iTunes. And if you have the time, it would be great if you could pop over there, leave a rating, leave a review, because it really does help me grow the show and make the impact that I'm really looking for. So just to say, I hope you have a fantastic week. I wish you the greatest success, and I look forward to speaking to you next week. Take care.